That's definitely not going to work. Are you a real Christian? I wonder how many of us have been brought up short by that particular question or something along those lines over the years. I remember at university when I first met real Christians, and for the tape that was with some, yes, as I'm using that, what's the word I'm supposed to use at that point? Quotations, yes, it's with quotations, thank you. It's in quotation marks, a real Christian. And they would ask you questions like, are you saved? Are you really saved? Are you so saved that deep down in the midst of your existence, you're completely sold out for Jesus Christ? I tended to avoid such people, it must be said. But the questions did trouble me. And as we all do, you go seeking for some degree of security. And so one evening, I decided that I would follow Jesus. I'm sure he was very grateful for my, condescension. But then, of course, that wasn't enough, because people would say things like, but you were baptized as a baby. So I remember one evening going along to a service that was announced for where there would be the renewal of baptismal vows with plenty of water. But then, of course, there was the whole thing of, but you don't speak in tongues. And that is the sign. I wonder how many of us have followed similar courses and been challenged, and perhaps been challenged from the pulpit. Indeed, I might have started with the question, are you a real Christian? And inwardly, everybody would be going, oh no, it's going to be one of those again. I hope I never preach one of those again. I think I've probably done it in the past. I hope I never do it again. It's a very, 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 very poor question. Just last week, I was contacted by somebody I knew from my previous parish, and I've asked for permission to share her story. Ruth grew up in my parish, but then she moved away, but she wanted to get married, and she came back to our home church. And so over a period of, getting on for a year, I think, I really got to know Ruth and her husband-to-be, Ed. And she had actually become part of the baptism preparation team, because she'd actually become part of the church by taking... What had happened was she's become part of a church where she's living now. I hope I never do it again. It's a very, 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 very poor question. Just last week, I was contacted, bringing her children along for baptism, and the local vicar had welcomed them in, and then, of course, as you do, gave her a job to do, so she was put on the team to help prepare people for baptism. And but she said, I have this problem, because there's all these people in church who say, to be a real Christian, you need to have given your life entirely to Jesus. And she wanted to know what I thought, and... Well, the first thing I said was, well, actually, one problem with that is it puts the emphasis entirely on what we do. And the Christian life is not about what we do. It's about what God does and is doing. But the second thing was that the story of Peter on the shore with Jesus was continually ticking around in my head. And I said, if you pay attention to what's going on in that story, I think there's hope for us all. Because, as you know, Jesus asks Peter three times, do you love me? Except in the Greek, he doesn't quite ask him the same question. Effectively, twice he says to Peter, Peter, are you so totally sold on me that you've given your life entirely to me? And Peter, given what has just happened, is not in a position to make such an assertion and replies, I'm doing my best to be your friend. Finally, Jesus said, Peter, are you doing your best to be my friend? And Peter says, yes, I've already told you that twice. And Jesus says, fair enough, and makes him the first pope. So I think there's hope for us all. And I said to my friend Ruth, I said, well, if basically Jesus says that to Peter and makes him the pope, who knows what he's going to do with Ruth? So there you go. We would think that Jesus would only, of course, entrust his church to someone of such monumental integrity and honour, somebody who had sold out entirely for the sake of Jesus, someone who had abandoned everything, someone who would die for him. And no, Jesus builds his church on somebody who has actually just revealed he's not at that stage yet, thank you very much. Anyway, Ruth was very happy with the answer, and I said, and by the way, if anybody still disagrees with you, pay for my airfare and I'll come and punch their lights out for you. But I want to think about Peter a little bit more at this point, because I think Peter, in a sense, in that episode in the book of Acts, really epitomizes what's wrong with that question, are you a Christian? Because in a sense, that's what's going on. But you'll notice what is happening in that story from Acts is not to do with individuals, apart from Peter. Peter is, in a sense, the individual. And then there are two groups of people. There are the apostles who are back in Jerusalem. Isn't it amazing? Hey, Jesus calls the 12 people, the leaders of his church, and they're still stuck in Jerusalem. I find that quite instructive and important as well. They don't seem to be very sold out for Jesus themselves. But anyway, what has happened is that we know the story of Peter being called to the house of Cornelius. And in an earlier chapter in Acts, that's all told. And then we come in chapter 11, and Peter then goes back to report back. And the thing is, because Peter has this problem. Because the people he is called to, the people he is called to could not possibly be God's people because they are Gentiles. You see, the question in a sense for Peter and the church is not, is this individual or that individual or that individual God's person? But is this group of people, are they God's people? And of course, for the Jews, the Gentiles were most definitely not God's people. Of course, there was a way around that. You could convert. How did you become one of God's people? Well, to put it in the language of what I was saying earlier, how did you become a real Christian? Well, of course, it was really, how did you become a real Jew? And the answer was, of course, you were circumcised. Just as a slight aside, I find it quite interesting that given that there were some people who were circumcised at birth and some people who converted to Judaism and were circumcised later, there seems to be no hint of a dispute in Judaism about whether it was a real circumcision because it happened when you were just 12 days old. Interesting, isn't it? There weren't all these converts who were saying, well, actually, I was circumcised when I was 35, and believe you me, that costs a lot more, and I certainly remember it. I remember my circumcision. Interesting, isn't it? There's no debate about that, which in a sense just shows how ridiculous these are supposed conversations over baptism. So Peter goes back to Jerusalem and immediately he is asked this, why did you go to these uncircumcised people and eat with them? Why did you share life with them? Because this is the essence of what is going on. To eat with, in that culture, is to share in life. And in a sense, the very fact that we eat together less and less and less is a sign of how much life we have really lost and how little we know of true fellowship. You ate with them. You shared in life with them. This is a question that is put. And Peter says this. He recounts the story of the dream about not eat, and then that voice that says, do not call anything unclean that I have declared clean. In other words, God has acted to make that which was formerly unclean, clean. So going to Joppa, he recounts what's happened. As I began to speak, the Holy Spirit fell upon them just as it had fallen upon us at the beginning. If God gave them the same gift that he gave us when we believed, who was I that I could hinder God? What does Peter see? He sees the life of God poured out upon a people. Note, there is no roll call. He doesn't actually say, now which of you have believed? It is evident that this people have been called by God and that the life of God has been poured out upon them. And they have done nothing. They haven't even prayed the sinner's prayer. And the sign, how does Peter know? That because the very life of God has been poured out amongst them. This life of God is only something that we can share in together. And so the question, are you a Christian, is in a sense a very, very poor question. We need a better question than that. What is the sign? The sign is the life of God amongst them. Little children, I am with you only a little longer. You will look for me, and as I said to the Jews, so now I say to you, where I am going, you cannot come. I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also should love one another. By this, everyone will know that you, plural, are my disciples, if you have this love amongst you. Jesus says, people will not know you to be my disciple apart from your brothers and your sisters. By this, everyone will know. There will be no questions. There will be no, have you had this experience? No, it will be plain. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples because you love one another as I have loved you. Jesus, to be frank, I don't think is interested in you being a Christian. He never told anyone to be a Christian. Rather, he formed a community of people, commanding them to follow him together, to love one another, a people whose life was his life. The question is not, have I given my life to Jesus? Actually, when we truly hear the gospel, when we truly hear the good news, it puts an end to all such questions. Peter tells the apostles and the other believers, if then God had given them the same gift that he gave us when we believed in the Lord Jesus Christ, if I'd seen the life of God amongst them, who was I to hinder God? And when they heard this, they were silenced. And you can almost see them waking up to the reality of what is happening. The question is not, have I given my life to Jesus? It is rather a fact that God has given his life to us. Jesus wants us to entirely give our lives to